Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 718. In your Facebook, a virtual panopticon, This program is being recorded on July 4th of the year 2010. Welp, happy Independence Day, and once again, we're going to take up the issue of independence versus lack of independence, and how does technology affect this? And specifically, as the title would indicate, we've been talking about Facebook, the well-known social networking site, and the general aura surrounding Facebook, and it's marketed fairly explicitly by its proponents, is that this is a way of expanding one's social life and also professional life. It's a way of reaching out and bonding with others personally and professionally, and thereby transcending slash overcoming some of the many physical and temporal limitations of the modern world. And what we're asking people to consider in this broadcast is whether, as we observe Independence Day, unquote, the anniversary of this country's, in quote, independence, unquote, is Facebook and our related and overlapping technologies, and we're going to get to some of those later, are they really things that enable freedom, or rather, do they to an extent engender a virtual panopticon, an institution in which the people housed in it can be viewed collectively or individually at any time, and yet their viewers will be undetectable to them? Is Facebook, and is Facebook in combination with other related and overlapping technologies, is this creating a virtual panopticon, and is it, in fact, eliminating any real concept of freedom or individual choice? And in this and perhaps other countries, something to think about on this Independence Day. We have been taking a look at an article from The Guardian, the British paper, from January 14th. Actually, it's January 14th of 2008. An article by Tom Hodgkinson called With Friends Like These. And skipping down in the story, we're going to be continuing. Share is Facebook speak for advertise, unquote. Sign up to Facebook and you become a free, walking, talking advert for Blockbuster or Coke, extolling virtues of these brands to your friends. We are seeing the commodification of human relationships, the extraction of capitalistic values from friendships. Now, by comparison with Facebook, newspapers, for example, begin to look hopelessly outdated as a business model. A newspaper sells advertising space to businesses looking to sell stuff to their readers, but the system is far less sophisticated than Facebook for two reasons. One is that newspapers have to put up with the irksome expense of paying journalists to provide the content. Facebook gets its content for free. The other is that Facebook can target advertising with far greater precision than a newspaper. Admit on Facebook that your favorite film is This is Spinal Tap, and when a Spinal Tap-esque movie comes out, you can be sure that they'll be sending ads your way. And skipping down. Furthermore, have you Facebook users ever actually read the privacy policy? It tells you that you don't have much privacy. Facebook pretends to be about freedom, but isn't it really more like an ideologically motivated virtual totalitarian regime with a population that will very soon excel the UK's? Thiel and the rest have created their own country, a country of consumers. Now, you may, like Thiel and the other new masters of the cyberverse, find this social experiment tremendously exciting. Here at last is the Enlightenment state long for since the Puritans of the 17th century sailed away to North America, a world where everyone is free to express themselves as they please, according to who is watching. National boundaries are a thing of the past, and everyone cavorts together in freewheeling virtual space. Nature has been conquered through man's boundless ingenuity. Yes, and you may decide to send genius investor Thiel all your money, and certainly you'll be waiting impatiently for the public flotation of the unstoppable Facebook. Or you might reflect that you don't really want to be part of this heavily funded program to create an arid, global virtual republic where your own self and your relationships with your friends are converted into commodities on sale to giant global brands. You may decide that you don't want to be part of this takeover bid for the world. For my own part, I'm going to retreat from the whole thing, remain as unplugged as possible, and spend the time I save by not going on Facebook, doing something useful such as reading books. Why would I want to waste time on Facebook when I still haven't read Keats' Endymion? And when there are seeds to be sown in my own backyard? I don't want to retreat from nature, I want to reconnect with it. Damn air conditioning. And if I want to connect with the people around me, I will revert to an old piece of technology. It's free, it's easy, and it delivers a uniquely individual experience in sharing information. It's called talking. That again with friends like these from the British Guardian of January 14th of 2008, an article by Tom Hodgkinson. And a few more details about Peter Andreas Thiel, or Thiel, I'm not sure how he pronounces his last name. Now, this is a Bloomberg.com story from December 4th of 2006. It's by Deepak Gopinath, G-O-P-I-N-A-T-H, and it's headlined or titled, PayPal's Thiel Scores 230% Gain with Soros-Style Fund. Now, this is the aforementioned Peter Thiel. He was one of the founders of PayPal. More about that later in this broadcast. And he also runs a wildly successful hedge fund called the Clarium Fund. And some more details about Mr. Thiel's background here. And again, I alluded to this in side one. First of all, his background. It's hard to say when Peter Andreas Thiel first decided that one person could outsmart the crowd. Born in Frankfurt, Germany in 1967, Thiel bounced among seven elementary schools from California to Namibia to Ohio to South Africa as his father, Klaus, a chemical engineer, worked around the world. Klaus, his wife Suzanne, Thiel, and Thiel's younger brother Patrick eventually settled in Foster City, California, north of Silicon Valley. And still more about Thiel. After collecting his law degree, Thiel clerked for U.S. Federal Circuit Judge Larry Edmondson in Atlanta and then joined Sullivan and Cromwell LLP in New York. He lasted 7 months and 3 days before quitting out of boredom, he says. He jumped to CS Financial Products, a unit of what's now Credit Suisse Group, where he traded derivatives and currency options for a little more than a year. So he went right after graduating law school, Sullivan and Cromwell, then a branch of what is now Credit Suisse, and still more about his political philosophy. Thiel is a proponent of a geologic theory known as peak oil, which holds that global oil production is now at or near its apex. Among his stock picks was Calgary-based Encana Corporation, which wrings oil from the tar sands of Canada. Encana stock rose 54% in 2005. In a number of programs, numbers, for the record, programs 478, 506, 534, and 552, I dealt with various aspects of the peak oil theory and how it ties in with some of the cartel agreements, the old IG Farben and Standard Oil cartel agreements, and how it also links with a very nice sort of touchy-feely, green-coated fascist politics. More about Peter Andreas Thiel. Again, the real driving force behind Facebook and one of three board members. It was mentioned in the article with friends like these, the long article with which we began the program, that Thiel was involved with Vanguard.org, a neocon internet-based site. Also, he is involved with a fellow named Robertson Morrow III. And this is from Gawker.com, and specifically, this is from, well, the full annotation will be in the description for this program. This is titled, Billionaire Facebook Investors Anti-Immigrant Heresy. It's by Owen Thomas, and it reads in part as follows. Insiders at Clarium Capital, the $5.3 billion hedge fund run by Facebook investor Peter Thiel, are buzzing about their boss's $1 million donation to Numbers USA, an anti-immigrant group. The donation is an open secret within Clarium, and it has enraged several staff members who joined Clarium because they believed Thiel shared their libertarian ideals. When I asked Thiel if he'd made the donation, an underling passed on a non-denial, saying the company didn't comment on gossip and heresy, unquote. A typo, he meant to say hearsay, but a suggestive one at that. Thiel has fallen under the sway of Robertson Rob, unquote, Morrow III, a Christian right-wing thinker who has personally donated to Numbers USA and persuaded Thiel to make his own much larger donation. Morrow is a controversial figure within Clarium, a hedge fund Thiel founded after leaving PayPal, the payments company he co-founded and sold to eBay for $1.5 billion. Morrow was once chief investment officer at the San Francisco-based company, but was pushed out of Thiel's inner circle after he had a nervous breakdown on the trading floor. Morrow slowly worked his way back into Thiel's good graces and was assigned to run the company's then small New York office. Recently, his influence over Thiel and Clarium, and I think by extension perhaps we might say Facebook, has grown. Earlier this year, Morrow wrote a paper called The Bull Market in Politics, unquote. His thesis was that government influence over trade policy, social programs, decisions of war and peace becomes more important, unquote, to investors. One key policy area, immigration, where Morrow thinks there is a rising consensus for restrictions. A politically driven drop in immigration has broad economic implications, especially on the housing market. With less population growth, housing prices will continue to suffer for much longer than most anticipate. But Morrow is not merely forecasting the market. He has cajoled his influential boss to spend money to make his forecast a reality. A Numbers USA spokesman called me to deny that Thiel had actually made a donation, but the money trail out of Clarium is clear, insiders say, and it would be a simple matter for Thiel to have arranged to make his donation through a third party like Donors Trust, a conservative foundation through which charitable grants can be directed. The reason why Thiel would want his donation to be anonymous is simple. Even while he's betting against immigration with his hedge fund, he's making money off immigrant-run startups in Silicon Valley. And so again, in addition to Vanguard.org, note that Numbers USA, a specific anti-immigrant activist group, and is basically another of the causes actively supported by Peter Thiel. And note also his association with Robertson Morrow III, a right-wing Christian thinker. Again, one of the things that I noted in the long article with which we began the program was that yet another of the three board members of Facebook, James Breyer, was formerly chairman of the National Venture Capital Association and served on the board of InQtel, a venture capital firm that was actually established by the Central Intelligence Agency in the Silicon Valley. From the Scoop website out of New Zealand, this is the NewZealandHerald.co, there's the following story from Matt Greenop, and this is from August 8th of 2007. It's titled Facebook, the CIA Conspiracy. And skipping down, we read, Facebook's first round of venture capital funding, $500,000 US, came from former PayPal CEO Peter Thiel. Author of an anti-multicultural tome, The Diversity Myth, he is also on the board of radical conservative group Vanguard PAC. The second round of funding into Facebook, $12.7 million US, came from venture capital firm Accel Partners. Its manager, James Breyer, was formerly chairman of the National Venture Capital Association and served on the board with Gilman Louie, CEO of InQtel, a venture capital firm established by the Central Intelligence Agency in 1999. One of the company's key areas of expertise is in, quote, data mining technologies, unquote. Breyer also served on the board of R&D firm BBN Technologies, which was one of those companies responsible for the rise of the Internet. Dr. Anita Jones joined the firm, which included Gilman Louie. She had also served on the InQtel's board and had been director of defense research and engineering for the U.S. Department of Defense. She was also an advisor to the Secretary of Defense and overseeing the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, which is responsible for high-tech, high-end development. So again, although I don't view this as quite as alarmingly significant as many really with regard to the development of any new technology, particularly any decisive technology, one is going to find the intelligence community deeply involved with that. However, one of the things that I want to stress is that, again, superficially we see technologies like Facebook as benign, liberating developments, and in fact, they can be used to become very malevolent and enslaving developments as well. And that's something I think we need to bear very carefully in mind. And again, noting that basically an awful lot of personal information becomes available through Facebook once you join it, and it leaves people really quite vulnerable to just about anything. At the very least, information is so much of the contemporary commercial landscape. In the past, wars and other struggles for economic control have been waged in order to gain gain dominance over such resources. And so when we see an organization like Facebook with the sorts of individuals behind it who are in fact behind it, we want to pay very close attention to the men behind the curtain, because those are some very, very, very interesting men indeed. Now, still more about some of the folks behind Facebook. Once again now, oh, by the way, the individual who we were talking about earlier, Peter Thiel, also was something of a right-wing activist at Stanford University. And while I would not necessarily, this before his tenures with Sullivan and Cromwell and Credit Suisse, which I do think are significant, it certainly indicates that he was moving along some of the power networks that yielded George Bush and that are inextricably linked with the operations of international fascism over the years. While at Stanford, and in addition to publishing the Stanford Review, he also was very critical of Stanford's curriculum and published a book called The Diversity Myth, Multiculturalism and the Political Intolerance on Campus, that based on his Stanford University experiences. One of the examples of political correctness that Thiel and his co-author Sachs cite in the book involves a law student named Keith Rabois, and I may be mispronouncing this, R-A-B-O-I-S. The offense that Rabois executed basically was the following. In a misguided attempt to assert his freedom of speech, Rabois yelled, quote, "Faggot, faggot, hope you die of AIDS," unquote, outside a lecturer's home. He was hounded out of Stanford, Thiel and Sachs say. Rabois later joined PayPal. Rabois's behavior was offensive and stupid, Thiel says. He says he still thinks that the incident was overblown. The extreme reaction to it was not quite proportionate to what happened, unquote, he says. Well, again, this is his view on something that happened when a fellow was fairly young and then when he was young, but the fact that Peter Thiel undertook to hire this guy at PayPal later, well, I think that's significant. And while one wants to avoid guilt by association at the same time, association by guilt can be something that we want to pay a lot of attention to. And again, I think it is revealing, not necessarily overly significant, but revealing that someone who would go out of his way to be as ripely provocative as Mr. Rabois obviously did, well, that somebody like that would later be hired by Peter Thiel, I think, is indicative of, at the very least, the man's overall sensibilities. And is this really someone you want to have access to all of your most sensitive information? Now, another person with whom Peter Thiel has been networking, and one of a very small number of individuals who have launched in sequential order, but who have launched YouTube, PayPal, they've launched Yelp and also Facebook now. And this is a fellow named Roloff Botha. He is the grandson of Roelof Peek Botha, a former South African foreign minister. And he is actually, the Peek Botha was a fellow, although he helped to negotiate the release of Nelson Mandela, he was himself an ardent supporter of apartheid. And it's interesting, in AFA 35, Roelof Peek Botha apparently was tipped off that Pan Am 103 was going to be bombed. He took a different flight with more rigorous security procedures and survived. But the UN administrator for Namibia, formerly German Southwest Africa, and that was a territory that South Africa had maintained hegemony over, and that ultimately was teased away from apartheid South Africa by the United Nations and international pressure, the UN administrator for Namibia was also scheduled to be on Pan Am Flight 103. However, he did not get tipped off, and he died in the explosion. And this Roelof Botha is the grandson of Roelof Peek Botha. Again, one doesn't want to make too much of this yet. When you see someone of this degree of influence within the nascent tech world, and when you see a background stretching back to South Africa's apartheid era, one wants to take note of that. As we've talked about it in a number of programs, apartheid South Africa was something of an outgrowth, something of a branch off of the Third Reich. The core of the political power, the core of the power structure in the apartheid regime was something called the National Party. Its core, in turn, was something called the Bruderbond, or Brotherhood in English. And that basically was a fascist organization that dominated the life of apartheid-era South Africa. It was structured along the lines of the German Nazi Party and worked with the German Nazi Party prior to and during World War II. And South Africa remained a repository for elements of the Nazi diaspora in the post-war period, when the Third Reich went underground and was able to perpetuate itself through economic power and also political alliances with various intelligence services and political organizations during the Cold War for the purposes of prosecuting the Cold War. And again, Roelof Botha's grandson, again, a foreign minister of an apartheid-era government, Roelof Botha's grandson is not only an associate of Peter Thiel, but as we're going to see in one of the last articles that we're going to read, was an individual who oversaw, basically, or who stand astride a number of tech companies which pretty much dominate the tech landscape. A Forbes article of February 12th of 2007 has an article by Erica Brown called The Art of Selling Out, and it reads in part, Roelof Botha has been a venture capitalist for 3 years, and he dreams of putting up the early money for a Google-scale success that is adored on Wall Street and feared by rivals. But Botha, 33, is one of the hottest deal makers in Silicon Valley for taking the opposite tack, selling out. Botha joined Sequoia Capital, one of Silicon Valley's elite venture capital firms, in 2003. He had helped run the PayPal online outfit. In February of 2005, two PayPal pals of his started a video weblet called YouTube. Botha put up $8.5 million in Sequoia cash for a 30% stake. In November, Google bought YouTube for $1.65 billion in stock. Sequoia will reap a 65-fold return, catapulting Botha onto the Forbes Midas list of top tech dealmakers. He ranks 23rd. And again, PayPal and YouTube and Facebook and Yelp all are heavily overlapped in terms of individuals and also capital participation. More about Botha's background. Botha was born and bred in South Africa, the grandson of Roelof Peek Botha, a foreign minister from 1977 to 1994 in the apartheid government, who supported the release of the imprisoned Nelson Mandela and later served in his government. I would also note that it was in this period that the apartheid-era government of South Africa was closely allied with the most reactionary elements in this country and around the world for the closing phase of the Cold War, and that powerful apartheid-era South African elements, Bruderbond-connected elements, appear to have helped to finance Harkin Energy, one of George W. Bush's energy companies, and itself apparently little more than a money-laundering front. One of the close associates of Roloff Peak Bota, by the way, and again, one doesn't want to make too much of this. One wants to avoid the concept of guilt by association. On the other hand, association by guilt is something one wants to pay attention to. From the Times of Zambia, the obituary for Franz Richter, a game tourism pioneer in South Africa. This is by Chris Barron from December 2nd of 2007. Franz Richter, who was murdered this week in a robbery near his game ranch outside Johannesburg at the age of 80, was one of the pioneers of game tourism in South Africa. Skipping down, as a youth in Romania, he made his way to Germany, and where he promptly was drafted into the Hitler Youth and forced to fight in the German army. And the article goes on to describe how close he was to Roloff Bota, a very good friend of his who was mourning this fellow's murder. And again, one of the good buddies and a fellow who was one of the pioneers of game tourism in South Africa had a background in fascist Romania and fought for the Third Reich. We're going to wrap things up by the way, the concept of the virtual panopticon is something that I'll tag into the description for the record program 718. We're going to conclude the broadcast with an excerpt from a post on linksviewer.com. And that concerns some of the overlap between people who run some of these various tech companies, including Peter Thiel and Roloff Bota. Miguel Heft, who used to be often read in the Mercury, is now a tech writer for the New York Times and had an article on the front page business section on Tuesday about the pals from PayPal and their microcosmic Silicon Valley networking effect and how the small group has hatched and reared some of the most successful companies and exits in the tech world. However, Heft is not yet familiar with our Lynx Viewer tool that does visual networking for Silicon Valley tech and VC networks, and as such, I can't blame him for the illustration from the Times, a network of sorts, but I can credit him with the inspiration to put up some of my own constructed networks of this power cluster that has achieved the kind of success to which we all aspire. It is important to remember that in this network, both Peter Thiel and Reid Hoffman are represented twice, once as an investor with a yellow node and once as a person, board or management team member by a pink or purple node, as noted in the legend at the bottom of the full-size map. In the center of the map, the three-person nodes for Thiel, Hoffman, and Roloff are very central because of their involvement with companies across this entire network. The investor nodes for Hoffman and Thiel create the bottom section of the network because of their investment in companies like Wink, Facebook, Six Apart, and LinkedIn. The bottom left of the image is dominated by PayPal and all of the people linked to it, but the center and top right portions of the map are populated by all of the newer adventures of the PayPal pals, including LinkedIn, Zoom, Facebook, Tagged, Wink, Friendster, and Grassroots Enterprise. The next image focuses on just the newer adventures after PayPal. This network is constructed around the company LinkedIn. The people Roloff Bota, Peter Thiel, and Reid Hoffman, and the investors Reid Hoffman and Peter Thiel. In this network, you can see the powerhouse of company involvement around these individuals. Hoffman, Thiel, and Bota are especially important because these networks only include board members and management team. Even though YouTube's founders are no doubt going to assume more and more central roles in the network if they continue their involvement with new tech adventures, but they were not management team level employees at PayPal. That concludes side two. So think about how much freedom you really have here on this Independence Day vis-a-vis some of these technology developments. This concludes side two of For the Record program number 718. In your Facebook, a virtual panopticon ? This has been recorded on July 4th of 2010. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.